Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I'm David Reed, and with me as always is Marit Larwood.
Hello, listeners.
I'm afraid Danielle Ward, if you missed last week, is no longer doing this podcast. So if you'd like to send her any fan mail, we shan't pass it on.
She's gone to work for, was it Movie Muck-Ups?
Movie Muck-Ups, her brand new podcast.
It's doing really well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's doing really well.
Who is that voice? That is only the voice of David McNeil.
Girl Company, I am in the studio this week. It's lovely to be back again, thank you.
For those people who don't know, do you want me to call you David or Dave? What's your stage name?
What do you feel most comfortable with?
More like a Roy.
Yeah, I'm happy to go with Roy.
Roy.
Okay.
Dave McNeil, previous guest on the show, you brought in Wild Geese, I seem to remember.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, I was actually, I was thinking about Wild Geese the other day, going, I love a getting a team together montage. Yeah. I bloody love it.
And also, you might, if you want to put a face to Dave McNeil, he was the star of my Film Fandango live film, Masters Evil.
That's true.
In which he played the protagonist in that.
He's a troublesome actor, I've heard, always getting his hair cut.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got your hair cut the day after.
What's your side of this? Because Marek has banged on about it for weeks.
I'm very much method.
I'll explain the backstory first of all. I spent a day filming with Dave in the kitchen, and I said, when can we do the next scene? And he went, I've had my hair cut really short, but literally about 5 or 6 inches off it.
You can tell in it as well, because my hair gets longer and shorter.
And that was still 5 weeks later.
Wow.
I had to push all the crew back.
I'm very nearly bald, so...
I am bald.
Takes a lot.
Beat that.
I'm not making any sort of...
It's a bald off.
Well, Marek wins clearly, but...
We're not that clearly.
I've still got quite a bit of hair.
Yeah, but if I wanted to...
Oh, you could grow it back.
Well, I've gone for the short look.
You've gone full Statham.
Yeah.
And I'm just sort of going for the monks thing in at the back.
Charlton.
Yeah, and to be honest, that film did scare me. I didn't realise how bald I was getting at the back, and then it actually is like a proper bald spot.
That is the only time I noticed how bald I was. Can you never see the back of your head?
No.
Except that bit when hairdressers, but you don't. When hairdressers show you with the mirror,
they always go, "Oh, that's really nice."
But you don't do that.
They just show you your neck, though, don't they? They just show you I haven't screwed up the bottom bit.
That's just a photo of someone else's. But they could do that photo of someone else's back of someone else's head, and you just go, "Oh, that's nice."
That's fine. Things.
That's fine.
And you wouldn't know that you actually wouldn't something bad on the back of the head.
Oh, have I got a tan on my neck?
Yeah, you've got a tattoo.
Yeah, I've got some wings tattooed on my neck.
You've got a tattoo of a blue Mr. T.
Weird. Well, we, quite excitingly, all watched a piece of movie history this week, didn't we? Seeing as how this film is the first ever to be released across all media simultaneously.
I didn't realise it was on actual normal TV. So what media was it released on?
It was released in cinemas, DVD, online on demand, as in you could pay to watch it online. And television simultaneously on Film 4, who were a production partner of it. It's Ben Wheatley's A Field in England, if you hadn't caught on already. Ben Wheatley, the director of Down Terrace, Kill List and Sightseers, that we have talked about previously.
All great films.
Yeah.
All great films. Now, this, I think, is his... It's fair to say is his most art house film to date. It's psychedelic, but I love the idea. It's black and white psychedelia, really, which a kaleidoscope but without any colours.
It's a bit backstory. So it's filmed. Yeah. It was filmed in 12 days and a budget of £300,000. And because what I think is great about this film, before we go into talking about it, is that because it's done in conjunction with Film 4, if you go on their website, they've got loads of short films made by Gareth Tunley,
who's yes.
brilliantly made, a making of. They've got about the cinema, if you're interested in cinematography, they've got about what cameras they use, what lenses, they made their own lenses in it.
And Gareth Tunley is—he's in Kill List and Down Terrace as well. So it's Ben Wheatley's got his kind of favoured people. The plot of this film is basically—it's set during the English Civil War, and some deserters, basically cavaliers and roundheads, push their way out of a battle through a hedge into a field, and. It's what happens afterwards. Basically, there is a hidden treasure and a man who claims to have the powers to divine its location and all sorts, but they eat some magic mushrooms and it goes a bit strange.
A bit of a drugs montage.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you think of it then? David, or should I call you Roy?
Let's go with Roy.
Okay, Roy.
I thought we had loads of really nice bits in it, and there's bits in it where you sort of think, wow, it's such an original idea or a way of filming bits. Like, for example, when Shearsmith actually becomes the divining rod and he comes out of the tent, and they play it in slow motion.
Creepy as hell.
And he's smiling, and he's got this devilish look.
I mean,
in his eyes.
I think that shot specifically will stay with me.
And it's worth watching
those kind of iconic moments in films where. They will last longer than your memory of what happened in
it's
the film.
It's so creepy because he comes out and they slow it right down and he's got this smile on his face, but because it's slowed down, they play this sort of music over it as well, but the shot goes on for about 2 or 3 minutes, I think, and it's, you know, all it is him walking out of a tent.
But it's followed sort of 3 solid minutes of him screaming in agony in a tent, and you don't know what's happening. I thought artistically it is... stunning. I mean, I thought visually it was great. Like,
did you really?
Yeah, I did. I thought there was an author behind it, as in shots lingered when he wanted them to linger and fast cut when he wanted them. You know, it wasn't afraid to linger on a facial expression, which I think a lot of films are these days. I mean, it's an art house film. It isn't a thriller or a heist movie or any of these things. You know, it is... a weird piece. It's a weird little homegrown piece. Yeah. But I thought the cast, we should probably mention, is Ben Wheatley likes to cast from comedians almost exclusively.
Yeah.
It's Reese Shearsmith, Julian Barrett's in at the beginning. It's Michael Smiley, who many of you may know from Spaced. He was in Kill List as well and Down Terrace. Richard Glover,
who's a really nice
he's
man.
He's excellent. He's in Sightseers.
He's a cyclist or bloke in Sightseers, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a film I'd want to watch again. I thought the script that's written by Ben Wheatley's wife, actually, Amy Jump, I thought was excellent. Like, I really like it. It's written in the language of that day. And... it's meticulously written as well. I thought it wasn't overly expositional, but it also wasn't too sort of art wanky either. I'm working on a TV show with Michael Smiley at the moment, so I've actually been able to talk to him about it, which has been fun.
What did he say?
Oh, it's great. I haven't interviewed him and quizzed him about it too much. I've just chatted to him about it between rehearsals. But he was saying they really pored over the script, like they deliberated for a long time over the use of the word envelope that was in the script, and they had to sort of research it, and they found out actually that word probably didn't come into use until 2 years after this is set, so they cut it, you know, and it's all of that stuff. Like it's a labour of love. They've poured the time and effort in, which is the stuff you can do for free without the big budgets, you know. I think it's a very lovingly made film, I thought.
And the song in it as well, which Richard Glover sings.
Blue, like, My Boy, has stayed with me as
It's a really, really nice moment, I thought. It's like, you know, all he is, he's just singing this song and this sort of play it over a bit, and then, but the, you know, I think it's sort of the theme of the film, really, the, yes. you know, the song itself. But it's a really sort of nice little moment in the film, just him singing it. I don't even know if there's any accompaniment or anything, but you know, it's some sort of a lovely moment within it.
Did you think it needed to be shot in black and white? Because I thought, in some ways, it was so crisp, it looked oddly like a video rather than film at some points.
Oh, interesting.
So it did, and it threw. For some reason, I associate black and white films with a sort of more grainy look and a more time passing. So when you're watching a film about the Civil War and the images are all so crisp, it felt modern because of the language of film in my head associates older films with more decay.
You're used to a possibly more 60s or 70s film stock and what that looks like with daylight than this that had a more
digital look.
Music video look almost. I would say the sort of black and white in a field, it, music videos is what springs to mind, you know, because that's probably, but I know what you mean. It didn't bother me, but
I didn't actually notice it. Well, I did actually notice, but I after about sort of 10 minutes into it, I suddenly thought, oh yeah, it's in black and white, you know. It's
you must have been really hungover then when you watched it.
Yeah, also I've got a really old television.
You've got black and white television, haven't you?
Yeah, snooker's a nightmare. Yeah.
I really like the cast. I thought we're great, but what was my point?
It's interesting casting comedians, isn't it?
I think Michael Smiley had a new lease of life.
Yeah, and loads of stuff.
Well, he's been doing, you know, really good stuff recently.
He's in Luther as well as a detective.
He's in Luther, he was in Utopia, he's in Black Mirror, he was in Ripper Street.
And he's also in this film about these soldiers, this team of mercenaries that go into a Nazi bunker to retrieve a weapon that can bring back the dead.
Not the bombing man.
No, I think it's called The Bunker. And or something like that. But
I try and mention that every week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Marek's ongoing franchise, Bombing Man.
The Bombing Man.
I thought
we didn't have a the before, but maybe this is a rebrand, a title decision.
I like the way he's a question mark on the end.
Bumming Man.
No, but what you said then? The Bumming Man. That adding a question mark to the end of a film title, just instant intrigue.
Bumming Man 2.
No,
I thought recently, I watched the trailer for Riddick. Okay, the third Riddick. Third film in the Pitch Black.
Dench.
But they're trying to start the franchise over because Pitch Black was really kind of cool and low budget sci-fi. Mm. Chronicles of Riddick was incredibly expensive crap, so they're trying to start it again. But I noticed it's an increasing trend in movie trailers, I think, is if you want to make your trailer seem mysterious and to give your audience the idea, the feeling of what is going on here, then just have a character scream at the top of their lungs, "What is going on?"
This is madness!
just like have some loud, shadowy things happening, and then have someone go, "What is going on?"
Speaking of
very effective.
I saw, I think, one of the best trailers. Did you ever see the original trailer for 28 Days Later? Which is, they don't really show any of the film in it whatsoever. It's just sort of day one exposure.
Oh, yeah,
day
three.
I think very so, good. Yeah.
Less is more.
Less
you're
is
right,
more.
Especially when it comes to hair.
That's right.
Bring it back full circle. Now, in terms of this film, the feel of this film,
I feel like you're holding back on saying you don't like
it. I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't like it. I really like the fear. I saw Kill List first.
Yep.
I thought it was really shocking.
Yes.
And disturbing, but brilliant. And then I saw Down Terrace, which I thought was...
That's my favourite, that one, I thought.
I thought it was another amazing film.
Absolutely fantastic.
And then Sightseers, obviously, what he worked... it was a different feel to the film. This, it feels, and I think it's been influenced by like The Wicker Man and... what's the one that with the Faking and Witches, the Witch Hunter,
Matthew Vincent Price,
Witchfinder General.
Yes, it's got that feel to it.
He's mentioned that in interviews because of the similar subject matter and the look and things. You know, he said it's inevitable, really. But he was saying actually probably the most influential film on his palette and tastes and aesthetic is Threads, which we've talked about quite a bit. Yeah,
that's the most disturbing thing I've ever seen. I think Threads,
the bleakness of it. So it's very interesting. I mean, I think he's a lot like Nicholas Rogue as well in sort of his palette of stuff. But why didn't you like it?
Because I thought it was a mess, and I thought it, for me, it looked too modern, and I thought they had a rough script. But I don't like films that are so ambiguous. It almost seems that there's a lack of a coherent thread in it, and I thought it was just weird. I didn't understand why the characters, who are essentially a group of deserters, four deserters, who have deserted, they're obviously loners, they've run away from battle.
Yes.
Yet they're bonded together for what reason, I don't know. I don't know if there's enough reasoning for why they were sticking together. I just didn't like, I thought Michael Smiley was great in it when he came on. I just thought it was quite boring, and it was overlong in bits, and I thought it wasn't a strong enough story to sustain the film. I appreciate what he was trying to do. I think it was an experiment that was interesting, and I think it's cool to like this film, but I just didn't think it was particularly good.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought there was plenty to get out of it. I don't think it's a perfect movie.
I would say,
and I don't want to make, you know, every film follow the same structure, but I felt this one felt a bit unbalanced. Like, the end was rushed and the middle was flabby, but I actually really enjoyed the script. I really enjoyed the performances. I thought they were different. I thought Richard Glover specifically was really good.
He's great. Yeah.
He's really good, and I hope he gets lots more work out of it rather than just those Specsavers adverts.
He's very good in those.
He is excellent. Great.
I've bought so many glasses.
I know, just off the back of his crap fall alone. No, he was excellent, I thought. The soundtrack, I thought, was excellent as well. That's been released on white vinyl as well. Mm. You know, they've just kind of done the whole thing, yeah. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I actually enjoyed the excitement around the hype around it as well. If it didn't live up to that hype, that's absolutely fair enough for you. But I thought the idea of releasing it across all media so that if you can't afford to go to the cinema today, you're not left out. I thought was, but if you want to go and see it with the big speakers and on the big screen, you can do that also. I think it's a way to go, especially for films that are never going to compete with the Monsters University or the, you know, the Fast and the Furious Sixes or whatever. No. You know, they're never going to compete with those opening weekends, so why should they have to do the same thing?
No. I think Film Forward did a brilliant job, and if you go to their website, and if you're interested in any aspect of the film, they've got extensive videos, they've even got a list of what things mean, like what depth of field means, what sort of all the filmic terms. So it's a great way in for people to think, to learn about the filming experience. I thought it was fascinating, the backing of this and the whole sort of, not just the film itself, but the process of what Film 4 provided.
The development as well, because they developed this virtually from scratch, didn't they, Film 4? Because I was reading a bit about that, and it was like a special scheme that they'd set up.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, Ben Wheatley's quite well known and established as a director, but, you know, the building up of it all and stuff, and it was, you know...
They shot it in 12 days, which is incredible.
Amazing.
That's so incredible, yeah.
And I love an imaginatively written bottle episode, which is exactly what this is. It's all one location. For, you know, for all we know from just creative use of camera angles, it could all have been within a 20 square yard area.
It pretty much was. They watched the making of it. They filmed it in one, but the same space.
Yeah,
the whole time.
And it's interesting because it is all shot in that field and stuff. But it's, you know, they're just using one location. I think it is quite diverse what they do, you know, the shots they use within it and stuff, like when the wind's blowing through the corn and stuff.
Beautiful.
And also the sort of framing of the trees around the actual field itself, and it's just shows how you can get so much out of so little.
Yes.
I mean, the director of photography, that was really great.
Excellent.
But it was
excellent.
But I think with Ben Wheatley films, I think he's got such an original voice, and there's so much to all his films that when I watch it, I just felt like I've not seen anything particularly like this before. And even though, yeah, this film was perhaps slightly imbalanced in parts, but it was worth it just for some of the fantastic bits in it, which actually make you sort of think, wow, like, you know, like the bit of him coming out of the tent or, you know, certain other aspects of it.
But I would watch it again. As I say, I don't think it's a perfect film, but I enjoyed it. It's hard to believe that it's the same director who directed me some years ago in a TV show where I was playing Wii Tennis with a girl in a sketch, and I'm turned on by the girl, so I go upstairs, and then she sees my Wii character having a wank on the screen, and I turn to Ben Wheatley, who was directing this, and I said, Ben, why have I gone for a wank upstairs when we've shot two other sketches with these characters where we're boyfriend and girlfriend? And he just said to me, Dave, it doesn't matter.
That was filmed over 12 days.
It's that eye for detail. It's that eye for detail.
That was half a million.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, yeah.
Someone wrote on our Facebook page, I can't remember, saying about the release, and is this the way forward, the way of doing a simultaneous?
I think for small films, absolutely do this, because it means that everyone can be talking about it at the same time, whether they have time or money to go to the cinema, or however they want to watch it, they can watch it. It won't harm cinema to do that with this kind of film.
But it was odd experience, because I put Twitter on while I was watching it, and there was quite a lot of response.
Yeah,
there was someone on The Guardian doing a blog with the film as it was playing. And I thought that's actually quite annoying. I quite like the personal element of watching the film.
Yes.
Where you've got your own experience and you talk about that afterwards.
You don't have to look at Twitter throughout watching.
I know, but I was interested in what's happening.
Okay.
I didn't look at it lots.
I think it's nice to have, if you want that sort of connectedness with other people, that this is the moment it'll happen, is this time on this evening. That's an event cinema. But for films that can't afford the massive publicity campaign to tell everyone about it, then it will be happening nonetheless if it's all released across all media.
People were talking about the film as it was happening. Which never really...
I wouldn't participate in that.
Yeah.
But there would be people who are doing that, you know, not in the cinemas necessarily, but...
I like doing it when it's sport. I don't know about films.
Yeah. I mean, it just invades your enjoyment of it, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that does. I mean, I don't like people talking during films, even if they're enjoying themselves, you know?
Yeah.
I don't like people talking during podcasts.
Even if they're enjoying themselves. Yeah. Fair enough. Well, that is A Field in England. Track it down across all media if you're interested. Or if you've seen it already, why not write a 1-minute review for us?
That'd be
super. Our new feature where you can record your own reviews in 60 seconds or slightly less, but bang on 60 seconds preferably, and we'll play them on the podcast.
And how do they contact us?
You can email us. DearFilmFandango@gmail.com. You can write on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/FilmFandango. You can tweet us @FilmFandango. And brand new this week, we have a brand new website, filmfandango.co.uk. It's only small, but it's perfectly formed as so far. If ever you can't remember any of these details, go to filmfandango.co.uk. Every way to contact us is on there. You can also download the latest episodes from there, read our Twitter feed, and also, more importantly, brand new, you can donate towards the running costs of this podcast, because it is entirely free, and we are bankrupt.
I want to give money out so people can watch films. Yeah. I'm just being someone.
Oh, right, you're acting.
Yeah. I would like to give you all of my spare money so you can talk about films, so I can listen to it.
If you've enjoyed the podcast, then, you know, why not give a little towards its running costs? You don't have to, but it'd be nice if you did.
Biggest donation that you've received?
So far, it's no pounds.
Because this is the first week we've told people about it.
How much are you going to donate?
Whatever I can.
You know, £4.
Well, I get my running costs for the week out of the way, like the food shop and travel expenses and whatever's left over there.
In the bank account. That's fair.
I would also have to pay £3.49 to rent the film off the Film Force website.
But what about 10% of your annual income?
We're talking quite a lot.
Well, it depends what you're doing.
That's about £10 million.
Wow. Big shot. Big shot over here.
You are
a hitman in your spare time, aren't you?
It's a living.
Yeah, it's a living.
What film is the most accurate portrayal of a hitman as a professional murderer? What film do you think is the best? Is it Day of the Jackal or Leon or
Gross Point Blank? Is it mostly about going back to your hometown?
Well, they've got to do it at some point.
That's true.
Christmas, christenings,
to rekindle your love with Minnie Driver.
Yeah, voting, if you're still in that electoral borough.
Out of all the hitmen, I think you're probably most like the one from Dirty Harry.
Ooh, interesting.
Wasn't he a transvestite?
Yeah, no, I think he's a bit funny. Yeah, he's a bit mental.
I think you're a bit like Mr. Shush from Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
Oh, I've seen that. So.
Sort of got silent and deadly, played by Steve Buscemi.
Looking quite handsome, though. I quite like the work of Steve Buscemi.
Buscemi.
I think you're a bit like the lead in Showgirls. Okay.
hang on a minute.
Berkeley.
Yeah.
Right. Well, have we had any letters, Marek?
Yeah, there's one just there.
We've got a letter here. This is from Will Bamber. And Will Bamber, who speaks in the finest Queen's English, has said, "Dear Film Fandango, I'm a huge fan of your podcast, but please could I suggest a slight tweak to your Movie of the Week format? Unfortunately, I'm currently low on funds and cannot afford a subscription to insert film streaming stroke rental service here. Hence, I'm downloading your free podcast for my entertainment needs. So might I propose your movie review for next week be chosen from one that's due to air on Freeview, which includes the likes of Film 4, ITV 2, BBC 3. I'm not saying there will be anything worth watching, but at least I could then join in your fun. We'll consider that, Will Bamber.
We're going to watch the Andromeda Strain next week, so...
Yeah. Is that available on these things?
It's on Netflix.
No, but after that, maybe we'll have a think.
This week's film was.
Yes, that's true. Also, I have a potential challenge for you guys. I would like you to cast a live-action The Simpsons movie. I'm personally more interested in the peripheral characters like Comic Book Guy, Mo the Bartender, Willie the Groundskeeper, Mr. Burns, Patty and Selma, etc., etc. Would love to hear your thoughts. Keep up the good work, Will, from Cambridgeshire." We've actually cast The Simpsons before, which was, I believe, I had nothing to do with it.
It was Cher as Marge, wasn't it?
You won, mostly. You got Ben Kingsley as Homer. Terrible, terrible Homer. Cher as Marge and Peter Dinklage as Bart Simpson. So we're going to take your challenge up, Will Bamber. Thank you for that. And we are going to cast some of the peripheral characters. Namely, Ned Flanders, Mo the Bartender, and the villainous Mr. Burns.
Who's going to judge this competition?
I suggest our guest, Dave McNeil.
Oh, that'd be actually honoured, guys.
Roy McNeil.
Do I have to have seen The Simpsons to be able to do this accurately?
Oh, yes. Have you seen The Simpsons?
Yes, I have. Don't worry. I have seen it for a few seconds. Yeah, no. That's fine.
Okay. Marek, do you want to go first?
Who are we going to pick first?
Ned Flanders. Now, I have a suspicion we'll have picked the same person.
I don't think we will have done.
Because one actor jumps out at me.
I think you may... I can think of the one you might have picked, but I've gone outside the box.
Oh, you've not gone for Dusty Bin, have you?
No, I've gone for... Who else could play that sort of... I was thinking of the jumpers, mainly.
Bill Cosby?
Yeah. So you knew?
Yeah.
From the jumpers.
The jumpers. Bill Cosby.
Yeah, so you just think, do you know what? We don't even have to... He's going to bring those
jumpers.
Hang on.
Dr. Hibbert is clearly based on Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
But you've cast Bill Cosby as Ned Flanders.
Because of the jumpers.
Okay.
But you put... It's Bill Cosby with a moustache.
Okay.
And glasses. And I think it'd be really good.
Okay, well, interesting. I'm not dead against your
pick. You know in the Cosby Show, he's always quite moralistic, isn't he? And he's quite... almost pseudo-religious.
Yeah, you know he's a jolly doctor, yeah, who's always laughing at things and...
forget about...
And has a...
Yeah. Well, I may have forgot about Dr. Hibbert.
Okay, well, I've gone for...
Yes, William H. Macy.
Correct. Because I saw him recently in a film called Cellular, which I was not expecting to enjoy, but really, really did. It's Chris Evans. No, not that one. And Kim Basinger, who is kidnapped by Jason Statham. And he smashes her phone, and she's only able to call out one random number and ends up accidentally calling Chris Evans. And so he has to stay on the line and try and rescue her. And William H. Macy plays a cop who's one day away from retirement. But he's got the tash. He's a nice guy. He sort of can do no wrong, but he's got that sort of oakley-doakley nervous energy, I think.
Okay.
I think William H. Macy's a good chap.
Bad things always happen on the last day of retirement to police officers.
Never announce your retirement. Just tell them yesterday was your last day, and just that's it.
I mean, you just want that day to sort of tie up loose ends, really, didn't you?
Indeed.
You'd be a bit cruel sending someone out on the case, wouldn't you? You go, do you know what?
Oh, no. He can't let the case go. Everyone else is willing to just let it slide, and he's like, no, I should look into that, because I'm a good cop. I've been on the job for 27 years. He's a good guy.
It's good that he keeps up that sort of code of ethics right to the end.
Yeah, yeah, you know. Totally. Cellular, I think it's a good Sunday afternoon film. I totally enjoyed it. Apart from the credit sequence, is laughable. Okay, Ned Flanders.
I've got to say, David wins that one hands down.
Yes.
But I appreciate Marek's, you know, the imagination that we're
Well, you see, if we'd gone with Marek, it would leave who would play Dr. Hibbert.
He might be able to hear Buddy drinking water in the background. Buddy's not left the podcast, just Danielle.
He's still around.
Okay, you win.
Okay, next, I'll go first on our Mow the Bartenders. I went around the houses this one, really, just thinking of the ugliest actors I could. We know that Rich Hall is actually the inspiration for Mow the Bartender because he's friends with the guy who wrote the character. But I don't think he's been in movies, so I think it would be...
Mm.
Along the Marek rule, this will be an unfair choice.
Richard. If you don't know Richard, he's a sort of American comedian, and he looks exactly like
he works mostly in Britain, though, I think.
Yeah.
But I've gone for someone whose voice I think is similar and has a sort of he would be repulsive to women very, very well. I've gone for Gilbert Godfrey, who, if you don't know him, is he's in the Problem Child movies, but he is also Iago the parrot in Aladdin. He's Gilbert Godfrey, and he talks like that.
I think I know who he is, yeah.
He's always unbelievable.
Is he in anything else? Just so if anyone listening hadn't seen those two films, they might know who
he is. He's in the film The Aristocrats, which is a documentary about a joke. He's also famously got into a lot of trouble for tweeting jokes about the Japanese tsunami. You can look him up on YouTube. But he talks like that.
Okay, that's interesting. Marek, what have you gone for?
I've gone for someone who's mentioned in this podcast already. It's often happened.
Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
He was my first choice, and I went away from him.
I'm judging. Can I just throw one in as a sort of a wild card?
Yeah. Go on, then.
Paul McShane.
What, the actor who's recently died?
Yeah, not because of that, but, you know, from Heidi High.
Yeah, but you're not playing this, you're judging the game.
I know, I said it was like a wild card.
I don't even think it's a good suggestion.
Oh, come on.
All right, okay, I'll say Marek wins that one.
That's Gilbert Godfrey.
Oh, you should have showed me that before I said that.
I've won it now.
But I should...
Oh, it would be good.
Even though I've now seen the picture, I do still go with Marek's one.
Okay.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
One all. It all comes down to the Mr. Burns. Really hard one, Mr. Burns, I thought. Really hard, like to have that villainous high status and yet sort of the pointy features and the old face. It's tricky.
Mine's not very good.
Go on.
I've just gone for evil.
Who?
Charles Dance.
I've gone for Charles Dance as well.
No way!
I have a second choice, though. I'm willing to give... You said it first. I'm willing to go with my second.
Just to say you're both having the same one, I think you should go for your second one.
Okay. He's proven track record in Evil. He's one of my favourite character actors. He got the age of it. Max von Sydow.
That's a good that's one.
Very interesting. I mean, he could actually really bring something extra to it, I think.
Can I go for ex-Labour MP Gerald Kaufman?
How about Sven-Göran Eriksson?
Oh,
he'd be great.
Yeah, it would be good.
He could be in a film, though. He maybe had been in a film.
I've got to go with David again, because I think I genuinely would be excited.
Max von Sydow.
Max von Sydow's interpretation.
I haven't even picked one yet.
You said Charles Dance.
But you said Charles Dance as well.
No, but I then conceded you could have him, and I'll go to my second choice.
Bloody fix.
Well, you could have had that option.
Should I get a
you
second
chose
choice?
Charles Dance. He
you
would be
chose
good.
Charles Dance.
Yeah, I know.
You made your bed, now you've got to lie in it with
well,
Charles Dance.
David wins 2-1. So what did we pick in the end? William H. Macy, Max von Sydow, and
Steve Buscemi.
They're good choices, you know.
Yeah.
That's what happens, isn't it? If you write great, powerful characters, you can... They just work across any sort of...
they do.
Yeah.
Live or cartoon.
Well,
or...
we should play this game again until we've got every character The Simpsons have ever done.
Thank God for The Simpsons for saving this podcast.
Yeah.
Have you done Marge Simpson? You know the actress in Meet the Parents, that's Robert De Niro's
Listen.
Wife?
Yeah.
Is that the one that does the voice of Marge Simpson?
Oh, I don't know.
We picked Cher before from Marge Simpson. If you actually listen to this podcast rather than just thinking, oh, I'm going to rock up and appear and not actually listen to it. Have you ever listened to this podcast?
Yes. Marek always gets cross after he loses.
You judge people with animals, don't you?
No.
No?
No.
What's it about?
About films.
Oh.
What happens normally? What are the regular features in this podcast?
I've also got like the dancing competition.
Well, yeah. You just think you can rock up and just do a podcast, not even listen to it.
I'll pull the other one.
Well, that was the challenge.
That's it.
And that's the end of the podcast. Now, we've not thought it through ending on the challenge because you're always a bit grumpy.
Yeah, I'm across now, yeah.
Even if you win, you're a bit grumpy.
But it's like Schadenfreude, though, isn't it? People might enjoy it more by knowing that I'm really annoyed.
Oh, cheer up.
For a whole week.
Cheer up,
for
mate.
A whole week.
It's true. Mm. He'll refuse to leave my flat as well until next week.
But if you win, what's your mood like then?
I don't know, because I can't remember. Yet. I've won a couple of times.
What do you think it...
It's gloaty.
Yeah.
His mood gets gloaty.
It's sort of like a sexual euphoria.
A sexual euphoria?
Yeah. Well, on that bombshell, to quote someone, yes, we'll be back next week. We're going to watch The Andromeda Strain, 70s sci-fi classic. So we've not seen it, but why not watch that and tell us what you think? If you'd like to get in touch about any of the issues raised on the programme, then why not email us, dearfilmfandango@gmail.com, and check out our brand new website, filmfandango.co.uk. We'll be back next week with more films. Keep watching the films.
Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.